It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have 56 degrees under overcast skies. Out at the airport, they are indicating southeast winds at 7 miles per hour, and they're back up to 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the day. Southerly winds around 10. Slight chance of rain tonight. Mostly cloudy overnight too, with a low around 48. And just a 30% chance of rain tomorrow, mainly between 7 a.m. and 4 p.m. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kirsten Dobroth tells us what a Drix is. A fire broke out at the fuel dock in Whittier, leaving mariners without a place to get fuel. And a rare bird has been spotted in Kenai. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Biden administration is expected to announce this week that it plans to provide Ukraine with cluster munitions for its ongoing battle against Russian forces. Air Force Brigadier General Pat Ryder, the press secretary for the Defense Department, addressed widespread concerns about the controversial weapons.
I will say that we have multiple variants of DPICMs in our stocks. And the ones that we are considering providing would not include older variants with dud rates that are higher than 2.35%.
Meeting a lower risk of unexploded bomblets left behind and posing lethal danger to civilians in Ukraine, the International Committee of the Red Cross says some cluster munitions leave behind bomblets that have a rate as high as 40% of failing to explode on impact, which can lead to deaths or severe injuries to civilians who encounter the bomblets long after a conflict has ended. The U.S. Navy says Iran's Revolutionary Guard seized a commercial ship in international waters in the Gulf today. A spokesperson says the Navy decided not to intervene. The vessel might have been involved in smuggling. It's reported that about a fifth of the globe's supply of seaborne crude oil and oil products passes through the Strait of Hormuz. Deep-sea adventure company OceanGate has announced it is suspending all operations. And Pierre Stilder Wilson reports this comes just weeks after the company's Titan submersible imploded on a trip to see the Titanic wreckage.
OceanGate's website still lists 2024 expedition dates to places like Portugal, the Bahamas, and even future trips to see the Titanic. But now, small red text has been added to the top of the page. It says that OceanGate has suspended all exploration and commercial operations. Alan Grenier studies high-risk travel at the University of Quebec in Montreal. He says the OceanGate submersible implosion is unlikely to hurt the adventure tourism industry.
Once they can be convinced again that the activities are safe, then they will go back. And then that's the human nature, is to think, well, this happens to other people, it won't happen to me. I will be more careful.
Grenier believes the attention might even increase interest in high-risk tourism. Tilda Wilson, NPR News.
Former President Donald Trump's valet has pleaded not guilty to 6 felony charges. NPR's Carrie Johnson reports both men are expected to mount legal challenges to the indictment.
Walt Nauta continues to work as Trump's right-hand man, even though they await trial on charges that they conspired to obstruct justice. Prosecutors say Nauta moved dozens of boxes that contained highly classified government secrets to keep them away from the FBI. Nauta's hired a Florida-based attorney, Sasha Dedan, to help him with his legal defense. Special counsel Jack Smith wants to try the case in federal court in Florida December 11th, but defense lawyers are expected to seek a much longer delay. Carrie Johnson, NPR News, Washington.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, this is Terry Haynes. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is testing out a new marine drone this summer to help survey fish populations in the waters off Alaska's coast. As KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, the agency says the new technology could transform the work it does, from stock assessments for fisheries to marine mapping.
Alex DeRobertis is a biologist with NOAA Fisheries. He's standing in a big warehouse on Kodiak's Pier 2 next to Drix. That's the name of what is essentially an unmanned robotic boat NOAA plans to launch this summer.
It's probably about 2.5 feet wide total, about 24 feet long, and it's powered by a diesel engine.
The Drix looks kind of like the top part of a bright red submarine just visible at the water's surface. There's a couple ways to control it, from the research vessel Oscar Dyson or remotely using Starlink satellite internet. DeRobertis says it's a big first for the agency, and there's not much technology like it anywhere else.
You know, 5 years ago you couldn't do this. 10 years ago this was science fiction.
That's because although Drix is physically small, it has big potential for transforming the way researchers complete stock assessments for Alaska's fisheries. A pod under the vessel is equipped with sonar equipment that sends pulses of sound out into the water. The signals bounce back when they reach something. Think of it like a high-tech fish finder. Scientists can then combine that data with data from trawl surveys to get a better picture of the midwater column, where fish like pollock are typically found. DeRobertis says NOAA plans to use Drix for coastal mapping, too.
So the basic idea here is that the ship and the robot are going to be side-by-side, working in the same area. The robot is going to make half the acoustic measurements, and the ship is going to trawl where it sees fish and where the robot sees fish.
Scientists have only tested out the Drix in Puget Sound. This summer is a big trial run, though. The Drix will be used in the Gulf of Alaska for the first time and in tandem with research teams completing midwater stock assessments aboard the Oscar Dyson. Researchers will compare the data to see how Drix performed. When Drix isn't in use, it will be stored on the deck of the Oscar Dyson. That's another big part of this summer's test run, to see how feasible it is to actually use the marine drone in Alaska.
How do we do this, launch and recover it from a ship and sort of incorporate it in all of our operations? And really the only way to do that is to actually do it.
If it all goes according to plan, Drix might end up being a regular part of the surveys in the future. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
A fire broke out at a fuel dock in the south central Alaska community of Whittier on Tuesday, injuring two people and sinking a boat. City officials say the fire has also temporarily closed the dock, the only place in the harbor for boats to refuel. Girdwood Fire Chief Michelle Weston says her department was called at noon to assist with the fire, joining fire departments from the city of Whittier as well as the Anton Anderson Memorial Tunnel Fire Department. Medics evaluated two people who were then taken by a medical evacuation service.
We had a medic unit on scene, but we also called for LifeMed to transport two patients.
Firefighters extinguished the blaze by Tuesday evening. The cause of the fire remains unknown. The dock's closure has raised concerns for charter and commercial fishing fleets during the busy summer season. Jody Mason is owner of Alaskan Four Star Charters. He says the fire prompted Shoreside Petroleum to reopen its land-based fueling station, and people can fuel their boats by bringing them by trailer, but that's not a solution for everyone.
For those of us that have boats that are not trailerable, they are working on getting a fuel truck there that can pump both diesel and gasoline simultaneously, and as of yet, the location for that has not been determined.
Mason says a prolonged closure of the refueling dock will have major impacts on charter companies.
We've been shut down on Tuesdays and Wednesdays for halibut issues, so it has not affected us as of yet, but it will starting tomorrow if we can't get fuel. I mean, this literally could, you know, ruin a large percentage of us.
Whittier Harbormaster David Borg also told the Anchorage Daily News he has concerns about what the closure would mean for the city's commercial fishing fleet, expected to return between Thursday and Saturday. A white raven has been turning heads around Kenai for the last month. KDLL's Riley Board spoke with a local photographer who has been documenting the bird and says the white raven is both visually striking and culturally symbolic.
Gregory Messimer is an amateur photographer in Kenai who's been photographing and keeping tabs on the bird for weeks. Messimer first saw the bird on June 16th in North Kenai among a family of mostly black ravens.
The parents had seven chicks that made it, and one of its siblings has some white feathers on its chest, and another one has reddish feathers on its neck and face.
According to the Kenai National Wildlife Refuge, the raven probably isn't albino, a condition caused by an absence of pigment in skin and feathers. Instead, it's what's called leucistic, which means there's a lack of pigment in some feathers due to an absence of cells that produce melanin. Messimer says he took note, not just because of the bird's aesthetic differences, but because the white raven has symbolic relevance in many religious traditions and mythologies.
It's an omen, or it's a curse, or it's a blessing, mainly it's some sort of change is about in the world, and whether it's good or bad, I guess, depends on the tradition.
In Greek mythology, the white raven is associated with the god Apollo. In Haida tradition in northwest Canada, a white raven helped bring the sun, moon, and stars to Earth, but turned black when it brought fire to humans. Messimer also says white raven is an idiom.
In Europe, turns out, a white raven is a saying that is something that has a very, very low chance or an impossibility.
The Kenai National Wildlife Refuge posted about the bird on Facebook as sightings trickled in and called it a, quote, truly once-in-a-lifetime occurrence. The refuge confirmed that the bird is leucistic, not albino, because it has blue eyes instead of red, which would indicate albinism. Messimer is worried about the prospects for the bird. He says the white coat makes the raven vulnerable because melanin provides structure to the feathers and skin. They're also more susceptible to bacterial infections and to sunburns and cancers. He suspects the bird is unlikely to survive the winter.
Also, the feathers, the white feathers, don't allow it to hold in heat or absorb heat, so it'll be reflective in the winter. And
his hope, he says, is that the bird may be taken in by the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Center near Girdwood or the Alaska Raptor Center in Sitka. In the meantime, he's keeping an eye out for the raven to snap more photos, and he's hoping this one is a good omen. In Kenai, I'm Riley Board.
The 4th of July is a big deal in Kotzebue, where nearly all of the town's 3,500 residents celebrate with activities ranging from a parade and lip-syncing competition to a contest to see who can cut and eat the most muktuk, or whale blubber. KOTZ's Desiree Hagen spent the day eating muktuk and interviewing contestants and has this story.
A drizzly and overcast 4th of July didn't rain on Kotzebue's parade. Undeterred by dreary weather, large crowds gathered near the harbor Tuesday to enjoy a full roster of activities and unique competition. Decorated floats paraded through town, sending candy and trinkets down to open-handed onlookers. Ron Johnson is the director of Parks and Recreation for the city of Kotzebue and planned the festivities. Johnson, who is new to Kotzebue, said none of it would have been possible without help.
There's a lot of members of the community that come together and have really made this successful, and it would have been impossible to pull this off without everyone contributing.
The day officially began at 11 a.m. with an opening prayer followed by a flag-raising ceremony and the national anthem sung by Evelyn Putruck Garfield, who's the outgoing Miss Teen Arctic Circle. This year's theme was Salute to Our Soldiers. Kotzebue resident and Vietnam veteran Chester Ballett was honored as the parade's grand marshal. After the opening ceremonies, the Kukiktugruk Northern Lights dancers performed traditional Anupiaq dance and drumming, ushering in the day's events. Many of the activities were competitions, the first of those being a 5K race around the Loop Road. Then the crowd got a chance to try traditional Alaska Native games like the stick pole, where two competitors face one another and fight for control of a stick. Another was the 2-foot high kick, where participants jump with legs locked together to hit a ball suspended in air. An animal calling contest followed, where contestants mimicked noises made by different Arctic animals. Cheers from the crowd picked a clear favorite. Chanel Booth received first place for her ultra-realistic goose call.
All right, wonderful. It felt so awesome. I was really shy at first.
Chanel said she started practicing years ago so she could accompany family members in a Nupak dance.
When my brother was drumming a long time ago, I decided to learn how, and that's how I learned.
After animal calling, blocks of pink and black-skinned whale blubber were set out for the muktuk eating contest, called by Vice Mayor and MC Derek Havlin Lee.
Cheer them on, guys. Come on.
Chanel's mother, Lily Booth, took the title of the fastest female muktuk eater. She beat out half a dozen other women. Lily had tears in her eyes after winning the event. She said her husband's advice was to swallow the chewy meat whole.
It was kind of hard to do.
At one point, a chunk got stuck in her throat, but Lily said she still enjoyed the competition.
Feels good. My stomach feels rich.
Other events included a tug of war pitting Alaska Native women against non-Native men. The women won, as they have every year in recent memory. After that, the Miss Teen and Miss Arctic Circle beauty contests commenced. Kotzebue resident Lucy Akugluk Scheuer was crowned Miss Teen Arctic Circle. In interviews with KOTZ before the event, this year's newly crowned Miss Arctic Circle, Caitlin Inyugriksuk Smith, was asked her favorite Inupiaq value. Her answer, responsibility to tribe.
To me, this value means responsibility to not just everyone here now, but everyone here before us and who will be here in the future, and to protect our culture and keep it thriving.
The 19-year-old Smith is looking forward to her upcoming year as Miss Arctic Circle and says she intends to pursue Indigenous studies at the University of Alaska Southeast because of her passion for subsistence rights. To see photos from the day's events, visit KOTZ's Facebook page. In Kotzebue, I'm Desiree Hagen.
Computer-controlled tools have changed high school shop class in ways that some of us of a certain age wouldn't recognize. There are still bottles of glue and table saws and cabinets full of pipe clamps and drill bits, but next door there's now a studio with rows of computer terminals, and that's something today's shop class can't do without. Most shop projects start here now and end up anywhere a student can imagine. One Sitka High senior, who is both an aspiring engineer and a musician, spent the spring semester making his rock and roll dream come true. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
We all have mixed feelings about shop class. We made cutting boards for our moms or nightstands that weren't quite level, while the kid at the next workbench made a mahogany chessboard or a media center for the living room. Ryan Mosley has topped them all.
That's so weird, it's backwards.
This is Mosley No. 1, an electric guitar modeled on the famous Fender Telecaster made in clear dark walnut. It's got a brushed aluminum pick guard and an orange epoxy resin inlay with his name, Mosley, and a phoenix in flight.
I have a phoenix bird that I put on it because I was born and raised in Phoenix, so I was like, I'll do that, and then I have a last name.
I wasn't convinced a high school student could make a good guitar, so Mosley and I visited the Sitka Fine Arts Camp to meet with Sitka's premier rock and roller.
Oh, hey, I'm Joe Montagna, local Sitka, school teacher slash guitar player. I've been playing guitar my entire life, love guitars. I play lead guitar in a Sitka local cover band, Slack Tide. We just do lots of classic rock songs, and this is a piece you could put up in a guitar center when you walk into. Guitar Center is a famous chain down south, right? You would find this in a guitar center, and you wouldn't, like, blink twice at, like, oh, that's definitely a school guitar. You'd be like, oh, how much is this one? And then when you picked it up, the real connoisseur will be like, oh, this thing's going to have great tone because it weighs a ton. Yeah. And there's no name on the top. So I would say, oh, Mosley down there, who's that? It's gorgeous.
So you're thinking, well, he made it on a computer. Of course it's a good guitar. But he didn't make it on a computer. He designed it on a computer and cut the parts out on a computer-controlled router. Everything else, the walnut finish, installing the pickups and electronic controls, was regular shop-class elbow grease. The computer has elevated designs, but hasn't replaced craft.
Ryan's a single Design of Fab 2 student in a class full of Design of 1 Fab 1 students, so he's pretty much an independent study student.
Mike Vieira is one of Sitka's career and technical education teachers. He had the context and the contacts to help Mosley create his custom guitar.
So about 6 years ago, when we had just gotten this, we hosted a teacher workshop and had a bunch of teachers come down from different parts of the state of Alaska and the Northwest, and they built a bunch of guitars. And the teacher that led that, Corey Torpa, he teaches in Kalama, Washington. And so he wrote the tutorial for this. After that workshop, we were able to write a couple grants to spend some time together and develop curriculum. I've based a lot of what I do with students on what he was doing with students at that time. So when Ryan expressed that he had interest in doing guitar, I was like, oh, I know just the person.
Before school ended for the summer, I visited Mosley in the shop while he worked on the guitar. I watched him cut the curvy Telecaster body. Mosley observed as the router bit sliced through the walnut, one eye on the computer monitors next to the machine.
Yeah, looks like we got a nice cut. So there's all the pockets. So like this, I custom did this off a couple different design references because there's this tunnel to the knobs.
Mosley later cut the guitar's neck, which was a bit more challenging as it tapers. With time running out, he bought a ready-made fretboard and, of course, all the electronics. In all, he spent around $500 to build a guitar that sells for several thousand.
How much you want for it? We laugh, you know. Someone must have told that to Les Paul when he made his first guitar. That's the guy's name. You know who Les Paul is?
Yeah.
He literally designed it and went to the company and said, here, Gibson, it's named after me, you know, 0001. I can only imagine what that guitar would fetch today.
Oh, yeah. Well,
so, hey, you could be the next Les Paul.
Mosley is enrolling in an out-of-state undergraduate engineering program this fall. He'll probably have a roommate who, if fate is kind, had a great shop class too, where he was encouraged to make an electric bass, or at least drumsticks. Because nowadays, a cutting board just doesn't cut it. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Key indicators show the labor market remains strong. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute. The payroll processing firm ADP reports a big surge in private hiring. Employers added 500,000 jobs in June. The leisure and hospitality sector accounted for nearly half of that gain, but ADP does not adjust for seasonal hiring. Private employment is now about 4% above pre-pandemic levels. ADP's report also shows wage increases moderated, but still totaled almost 6.5%. The government also released a couple of labor market measures. Job openings declined a bit at the end of May, totaling nearly 10 million. That's still historically high. And the number of initial jobless claims rose to 248,000, still a healthy level. I'm Novosavo with a Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Thursday. It is the sixth day of July, the year 2023. Sun rose today at 5:19. It will set again at 11:09. That will give us 17 hours and 50 minutes of daylight, a loss of 2 minutes and 5 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 76 degrees, set in 1949, and our record low was 39 degrees, set in 1938. Currently 55 degrees here in Kodiak under overcast skies. They are calling for possibility of rain till 2 p.m. These clouds to continue to hang around. Southerly winds to 10. Slight chance of rain tonight. Mostly cloudy skies overnight with a low of 48. South winds to 15. And for tomorrow, a 30% chance of rain, mainly between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m. Mostly cloudy tomorrow, too, with a high near 56. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up this afternoon at 5:43 on the east side. That will be a 7.6-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 11:04 of 1.8 feet. And we have an extra low tide tomorrow morning, almost afternoon, at 11:51 a.m., minus 1.6 feet tomorrow. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 6:02 p.m. and be 13.4 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:51 p.m. of 2.8 feet. And your extra low tide for tomorrow morning will be at 12:22 p.m., so tomorrow afternoon, and it will be minus 2 feet in Larsen Bay. Let's check with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with revised Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 13, date issued 11:05 on the 4th of July. There will be a 105-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, July 6th to 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th in the following areas in the Outer Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. The Northwest Kodiak District, except for the Kajuyak Bay section, will remain closed. The Northeast Kodiak District, except for the Buskin River section, will remain closed. The Eastside Kodiak District, except for Passaic Bay, will remain closed. The Afognak District, except for the Duck Bay section, will close at 9 p.m. Saturday, July 8th. And the Inner Katoy, Outer Katoy, and Iqaluit Bay sections remain closed. There will be a 57-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, July 6th to 9 p.m. Saturday, July 8th in the following areas. In the Cape Alitak, Humpy Dead Man, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. The Outer Iqaluit and Halba Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District. The Mainland District and the Duck Bay section of the Afognak District. After 12:01 a.m., July 6th, until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak district south of a latitude of Cape Kuliak, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Concerning the North Shelikof Strait fishery, short notice in-period closures may occur for the seine fisheries in the seaward zones of the North Shelikof Strait area, including the Cape Igvac section, as designated in the North Shelikof Strait Sockeye Salmon Management Plan. Closure announcements may occur at 8:30 a.m., 10 a.m., noon, 2 p.m., 5 p.m., or 8 p.m. on VHF Channel 6. The following areas that are currently open until further notice will close to commercial salmon fishing at 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th, the Fowl Bay Special Harvest Area and the Waterfall Bay Special Harvest Area. Closed waters for Saltry Creek, stream number 259415, are the normal closed waters as described in regulation from noon Thursday, July 6th to 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th. Closed waters are currently reduced until 9 p.m. Monday, July 10th. In Fowl Bay to the stream terminus at Hidden Lake Creek, stream number 251406, and in Waterfall Bay to the stream terminus at Little Waterfall Creek, stream number 251822, and to the stream terminus at Big Waterfall Creek, stream number 251821. As previously announced, cost recovery fisheries have begun in Spirit and Bay Special Harvest Area, and the Spirit and Bay Special Harvest Area will remain closed to common property fishing. Fishery opportunities in Spirit and Bay Special Harvest Area will depend on the ability of the Regional Aquaculture Association to meet cost recovery needs, and all cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-46559. That's 486-6559. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart, detailed in Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations and Statistical Charts, Harvest Strategies, and Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. And this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.